The Roundball Project is brought to you by Striptease, the one-stop shop for the discerning Australian football fan. They specialise in designing football-centric shirts, hoodies, phone cases, and masks. Yes, masks. Plus a whole lot more, so you can look as good around town as you do at the game. Find them at striptease.com.au. That's striptease.com.au. Enjoy the podcast.
Did the fullback bring him down? First time, maybe even second time. Still we go on. Juric has dribbled his way clear.
Welcome to the Roundball Project. I'm your host, Neil Simons, and I'm joined by SBS, the world game journalist, Nick Stoll, or Stolich as many call him. He's had a lengthy tenure with SBS, covering World Cups, the Champions League, the Premier League. You can go on and on and on. And I'm just really, probably one of our first journalists that we've had on the Roundball Project, but what a great way to start.
Well, you could go on and on with that broadcast voice. Neil, great projection. I am intimidated now. I was thinking, oh, it's going to be a nice chat. You've come in with a very good production. I can see there's a high-quality mic in front of you as well. Now, I've got to bring my A-game to this interview. Let's do it.
No worries. So, I thought we'd just delve into the character behind the World Game Live or wherever, behind the computer when he's writing up the wonderful pieces that you do write up.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
No, I actually really like that article about Rui Pinto.
Yes, that was crazy.
We'll speak about that later. But just describe your journey into journalism so far, and why football?
Okay, well, to be honest, it was more football before it was journalism. I obviously grew up playing, just obsessed with the game as a kid. And just obviously didn't have the talent to go professional. So, you know, The next best thing was getting involved in the media. And I was super lucky, actually. I happened to, for a little part of my life, grow up on the same street as Craig Foster lived. Super lucky. Yeah, it was honestly so lucky.
And he just so happens to be really involved with SBS.
Yeah, it was actually a funny story. I used to play football on the street, like the street I lived, and the neighbors would complain because, you know, I'd end up hitting cars, and me and my mate would end up making a lot of noise, obviously, and, you know, they'd into their front yards and whatever. And anyway, so one day a few of the neighbors were trying to get the other neighbors to like sign a petition or something to stop me and my mates playing. And then they didn't know that Foz happened to live in their street, and he was like, I'm not telling kids not to play football. That's ridiculous. We didn't even know he lived there, but I was 14. So I was really thankful that he kind of stood up for me then. And then from then on, I asked him if I could do some work experience at SBS when I was in high school. I did that. So from there, from about 14, 15, I thought, oh, like, here's something that I could do. This is a really cool environment. And so this is around like 2007. And back then, like, SBS, it was so cool because they had like Champions League, Europa League, all these games. And the people there just loved football so much. I just wanted to work in an environment where you could go into the office and talk about all football.
It's amazing. It really is. Yeah,
and everyone knew what you were talking about, you know, like, you don't have to explain, because, you know, it's like being a football fan in Australia, so often you have to like almost explain or apologize, you know, did you see this Champions League game? No, what, Champions League? Oh, like, it was fantastic. So from there, did the kind of traditional path of high school journalism at UTS. It took me a very long time to graduate because I was stuffing around, but eventually got there. Took up some jobs with the ABC first, went on to Fox Sports, worked there for a couple of years, and then went full-time with SBS at 2015. So, and then since then, I've kind of been doing what you've been seeing, whether it's been writing shows, cutting up videos. It's a very kind of like all round role where you just have to be very adaptable. And it changes with the technology. Like right now, the fact that we can Zoom so easily has just opened up so many possibilities. Yeah, so now it's like, all right, let's do heaps of interviews. So yeah, it's been interesting.
Well, I guess the sort of isolation period has led me to start this podcast, which has been a blessing in disguise, in my opinion. And I guess I like to just fall back on that your statement about going into these footballing environments. I'd like to speak about Football Nation Radio as well. Those, like wherever it be, FTBO, wherever those environments that you sort of engage yourself in, it's unheard of in Australia. And I think with the sports of AFL and rugby league completely dominating Australia, to find SBS have been long renowned for their footballing prowess, and Fox Sports, I guess, to a degree. But to see these other companies like FNR and, I don't know, many other companies come up and allow these young journalists like yourself to have a platform to showcase their work is really important. And to see you succeeding it's amazing to see.
Yeah, I mean, I think FNR and all these platforms are so good, and I really appreciate what they do. And yeah, like you say, like it's just really cool to be kind of young and enthusiastic and really be passionate about something, whether that be football or whatever else, and then have a place to kind of team up with other people who have that same drive, who have that same passion, who have the same kind of want to talk about the game and the same understanding. So I think it's so good. But, you know, it's cool, like, even if you're not, I don't know, for people listening, even if you're not in one of these places, doesn't mean that you can't go on to great things. Like I always think of like Ellie from Copper 90. Like Ellie, he's one of my like heroes, like what he's done, because he really wanted to work at SBS back in the day. There wasn't an opportunity, and he has taken the opportunity that he did get with Copper 90 and become one of, in my opinion, the best football documentary makers in the world.
Oh yeah, unequivocally, for sure. Yeah.
So what he has done is incredible. And that's someone who kind of didn't get in one of those kind of places. So I guess the kind of message is always like, keep going, keep trying. Mm. Like if you're passionate, it will come
forward. Forge your own destiny, as I say. Yeah.
Totally, totally. And that's the thing. And I think, yeah, you're right. Like FNR, great places to work. I really think they're doing a fantastic job. And you get to hear about, like, you get so many great talents emerge from these type of places. But even so, even if you're not in them right now, like keep going, you'll find something.
And I guess the sort of demand for football journalism, I'm not entirely sure because I've only been involved in the industry for about 6 months to a year. But there's definitely a market for it. I think with the AAP proposed closure, well, hopefully they'll get picked up by someone. That's really going to put a dent in our game. And I guess the main figures, just to throw out some names, Vince Ruggieri, Michael Lynch, Dominic Bossi, these guys are real pioneers of the game. And you speak to any of these guys and they will happily have a conversation with you. And I think that's the collective unity that we have in our game. But I'd just like to continue on with obviously SBS being the home of football in Australia, in my opinion. No shade, but
no. Listen, a lot of good places doing a lot of good stuff for football, but obviously, you know, like Optus doing fantastic, Fox Sports have done a fantastic job for so many years.
I mean, we're not going to delve into the whole sort of why that is that, but we're here to celebrate the game. This is the project. Do you feel is the key to writing an engaging and well-written piece of work that's able to sort of capture the traditional Australian football fan, whether it be on Facebook, Twitter, whatever?
I mean, it's a few things, right? Like it's, I guess, horses for courses. Like we've even kind of found, traditionally, like things that work for us are like Aussie abroad stories, like even obviously like an Aussie doing well in a top league of Europe. So I think, that is always a thing. Aussies abroad always does really well. Like I was saying, whoever it is, people are always interested to find. I think classic stories, you saw like kind of Joey Lynch write about Puskas this week, and I thought that was a really cool piece.
Yeah.
Ruggieri wrote about that Italian coach who has Australian roots. So that was brilliant. There's so many. This is the thing. Like you say, there is a big appetite for football in this country. Sometimes it's just it just doesn't seem like it, but I feel like there definitely is. I don't know how you feel like right now. Me and my girlfriend, both journalists, we're talking a bit about how hard it must be to, I don't know what your kind of history is, but coming out of uni, you know, you graduated, yeah. You're like, there's not that many job opportunities straight off the bat. Yeah, I mean, but that's the thing is like, I guess, because I had a lot of friends who did that. I had a lot of friends who, that was basically the split, was basically half of us stayed and kind of picked up random jobs. And, you know, not necessarily kind of in, like, I didn't start in football, I just started in general kind of radio. But then, yeah, half went overseas and there was, like, people kind of made careers from that. So, yeah, it is tough, man.
We'll get into it later, the sort of financials that come with the TV deals and sort of how these players' wages will be affected. And with all these players being stood down, it's really going to have a profound effect, not just on football, but AFL, rugby league, et cetera.
Yeah, totally. And media jobs. I mean, that's the kind of thing is...
Ultimately, yeah.
Even now, like, I'm very thankful for the job I have. And we've seen so many great people kind of recently, like, lose their jobs.
Yeah, Daniel Garb, we had him on the other week. Yeah, so that's totally. One example.
And that shows you it's not about how talented you are or how big your profile is. Like, it can happen to anyone. So, and it's such a shame when it does. But, yeah, I'm so thankful for the job I have. But also, like, I think it's never great when there aren't opportunities out there beyond, like, the job that you have. So, it's a real tough time, man. But I just hope, I think it will improve eventually. But, yeah, it's a real tough time. And I think kind of, you know, what you're doing here, setting up your own thing, I think that's a really good thing to do. Because while, you know, the opportunities maybe aren't there in front of us, to create your own thing is the best way to go.
Yeah, it's been a real long journey for me so far, and I can't wait to continue it. But in terms of that Rory Pinto article, he's the one who I believe uncovered the Manchester City financial issues. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it was a wild story. He was just like a kid growing up in Portugal. It's hard to kind of really, there's kind of the story you initially hear. And then I spoke to actually two journalists over in Portugal and I got a little bit of a different
side of it. That got some traction there. I'm not sure for the right or wrong reasons, but.
It went quite big in Portugal. I mean, this is the thing is I didn't realize first kind of how few people in Australia knew his story. And then second, I didn't realize how polarizing a topic it was in Portugal. I had for like 3 days. Yeah.
In case you haven't read the article, I'll link it in the Twitter, but just sort of describe his story and how he's pretty much caused the potential demise of many football clubs in the world.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. He basically uncovered through essentially hacking, although we don't know if someone maybe provided some of this information, but he came into possession of an incredible amount of emails and contracts and all this type of documents that, you know, said an incredible amount of things, whether it was that PSG and Man City were just kind of violating financial fair play rules.
The Julian Assange of football, would you say?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think even Julian Assange was asked to like testify on his behalf. But you know, these stories about Cristiano Ronaldo and a sexual assault allegation in Las Vegas, stories about you know, PSG racially profiling players, Sergio Ramos testing positive for a banned substance after the 2017 Champions League final. Literally, like, there were some of the biggest stories, the Messi getting paid via a shell company, some of the biggest stories that we've heard about have come from his work. Now, this is always the thing, we never really know, is he working alone? You know, there was 80 million documents or something that he gave a journalist. So that's a lot to pick up on your own, but it's a very interesting story. It's a very complicated story. But yeah, I'm fascinated by it. And I was glad to see that it got the response that it did, because I'm going to obviously keep an eye on it. But it's, and then once you look into the Portuguese angle, he kind of publicized so much negative stuff about Benfica, about the fact that they would talk about referees that would favor them in the last minutes, that they were coming up with strategies on how to increase their influence with politicians, with judges, with media, the way that they were actually giving commentators like briefing notes saying, okay, this is what we want you to say and all this kind of stuff. So he made them kind of, you know, very embarrassed. And then now he's in court, and one of the first judge that was meant to preside over him was a Benfica member and had, you know, liked tweets, I think calling him a pirate and all that stuff. So it shows you kind of how widespread the love of Benfica is. And I've been to Lisbon and it's a brilliant, amazing city, but that is a Benfica city. I mean, you know, there's 6 million fans or something. It's Benfica is huge there. So it just kind of shows you what he's up against globally and then in his own country of Portugal.
That's extremely frightening, and I guess it really shows what some individuals are capable of doing. And in this technologically vast climate, I think it's really easy to sort of curate it. Well, I wouldn't say curate this information and bring it to the public, because I think, you know, you're responsible for, well, not responsible, but just to bring to light these abhorrent stories. It's there's a lot of responsibility to take. For sure.
I was just gonna say, like, it's hard because, like, to some he's definitely a hero, and I, you know, just kind of on a moral ground, I think it is important for transparency, and I do want to, you know about, and I think it's important to bring to the public domain if these clubs or players or agents are doing the wrong thing. You know, there's a lot of money laundering that happens in football, and he was kind of exposing some of that. But at the same time, you know, the allegations against him are that he, you know, illegally access this material. And then on top of that, they're alleging that he used it to try and blackmail some of these organizations. So, you know, it's an incredibly complex story. And one's very fascinating, but one that's definitely not ending anytime soon.
So I thought we'd develop sort of your career as a football journalist. We'll go into that sort of career. Where have you traveled with SBS, or have you traveled with SBS at all? I'm sure you have, to a degree.
No, honestly, man, not really. I mean, I've been to, like, just around Australia a little bit, Melbourne and stuff. Unfortunately, kind of when I came in, SBS's budgets were kind of constricting. And, you know, with the modern media as it is, it became so easy to cover games via the television and, you know, via wire copies and all that stuff from your desk. So unfortunately, I haven't traveled anywhere near as much as I would like to. SBS also doesn't have the rights to as many things as we used to. So, you know, there's always a chance that I'll go to Qatar 2022. I'm not sure. They haven't said anything to me yet, but yeah, that's kind of one of the things about modern media is it is becoming less about covering it. And I know a lot of people in this are covering it just from the one location all the time, because you can access so much stuff now through the internet instantly. You can watch press conferences, you can watch games, there's so much there. You can now obviously Zoom, and, you know, I don't have to, for example, if I want to interview an A-League player, it's easier for me just to Zoom him right now from, you know, my table, rather than go to his house or go to the club or all this type of stuff. So unfortunately, yeah, no, I haven't really been able to travel, but I did get to go down to Melbourne to watch Brazil, Argentina and Australia, Brazil. So that was good.
Absolutely ecstatic moment. But can I just bring to light I guess there was a lot of controversy in 2018 World Cup about sort of Optus, the streams were they were crashing a lot.
Yeah.
And I guess SBS are forced into a position to really pick it up, and they picked it up in the best way I possibly could think. And I think they won an award for that as well. I'm not entirely sure what award it was for. But being involved in that space at the time, what was the sort of aura surrounding the environment there?
Man, it was one of the craziest experiences I ever had working in media. I mean, usually when you're working on a World Cup, it is incredibly intense. You know, the hours are, you usually work about 12, 13 hours a day, and that will
often start. Do you have to take on more staff?
Yeah. So we take on more staff, but even the staff that's already there, we get these special contracts, which are basically saying, like, all right, we're going to break the law for a month. And yeah, so we were working, I think it was basically like a 7 p.m. start and an 8 a.m. finish. So you're working you're working all the way through the night.
Nocturnal.
right. And listen, you're there with a bunch of other people who are doing the same thing. So you quickly transition. But it is, you know, it's exhausting. It's every day. There's no weekends. There's no days off, you know. And also you're completely dislodged from, you know, your friends and family and stuff like that. You don't really get to see them. I had just recently moved in with my girlfriend at the time, and I was basically not seeing her because she would leave for work before 8, which was when I finished my shift. And then by the time she got home, we'd hang out between about 5 or 6 p.m. And then I would go to work all night. So it was a tough time for that. But on top of all that, I was waking up every day to find out that, like, okay, we're showing another game. Okay, we've got tonight's games. All right, we might be getting the whole World Cup. All right, so it was nuts. I was seeing Karl Stefanovic go mental on TV. I was seeing the Prime Minister get involved. It was crazy. And to be honest, it was a really unfortunate thing that happened to Optus. It wasn't obviously any of their presenters or any one of the people that you see their fault. They have nothing to do with it. I mean, we were just lucky that our stream, I don't even know, the IT department, whatever, that they had worked the stream. I don't know how. It's an incredible operation. Someone
they had reportedly underestimated the amount of traffic that they were getting.
Right, yeah.
Completely fair enough.
Totally. And the other thing as well is, like, you know, you got to know that that's the person who's making that decision is just someone in who's an expert in that IT. They're not an expert in football, presumably. So, you know, I was just glad it didn't happen to us. It was crap for the fans. That was the main thing, was that they weren't getting the experience, because I know, listen, if I wasn't working, I'd still be trying to watch all the games. I'd be furious if my stream wasn't working. You know, I'd be trying to get on the illegal streams. So, it was just a crazy time. And then for it to all come to us when we only had a staff budgeted for one game a night, but suddenly we were doing three games a night, was just incredible. So the workload that we had to do was, you know, obviously three times as much. But the thing is, in that moment, and, you know, it was great, it was us, but I think any organization that's passionate about what it does would do the same and rise to that challenge and just make sure that, you know, you get out what the people want, which was the games and the coverage around it.
And well, I guess that was such an amazing time for Australian football. I guess World Cups are really where the spotlight is placed on football in this country. And it's, I guess, really unfortunate when it gets minimal coverage during the summer months when the A-League is on. But that's a whole entire different topic we could embellish on. In terms of the COVID-19 period, SBS have been very prominent throughout footballing circles. I think through the many interviews that we've seen, I actually listened to the James Johnson interview the other week. I think it was last week. It was very good. I listened to the Peter Philopoulos one that you were involved with as well. He's also been a guest on the show. And I guess, how have you guys coped during this recent period?
Yeah, it was interesting because our operation, basically, for the large part, has always just been just put up highlights, match reports, just like the daily churn. And it's what people want to see. You know, we do interviews from time to time. We do shows and stuff. But the thing is, when there's games every couple of days, you're just constantly just trying to get out those highlights and get out the next match and the next preview piece and all that stuff. So when everything stopped, we were a bit worried because it's like, oof, we're going to really struggle now. No one's going to come to our website because we don't have highlights or we don't have match reports or whatever it was. But luckily, and probably like, you know, you've seen yourself, is that we were able to pivot to do a lot more interviews, to bring out kind of some classic matches, to really kind of, you know, and it was a time of a lot of debate.
I think as we speak, I think they're broadcasting is it tomorrow or today? They're broadcasting to Japan.
Yeah, Australia-Japan is on Sunday at 3 p.m.
Sunday, sorry, my bad.
No, all good. I don't know when people will listen to this, but Sunday, I think June, May 31st or something. Anyway, Sunday, 3 p.m. Check it out. But yeah, it was an interesting time, and it's just been, honestly, I'm thankful that so many people have been willing to speak. I mean, whether it's been someone like Brandon O'Neill over in Korea, or I spoke to James Holland in Austria, you know, the people like the movers and shakers, like you were saying, Peter Philopoulos, Graham Arnold, James Johnson, are willing to speak. And that's not always the case, you know. For many years, I think it was hard to speak to a lot of these administrators, a lot of these people within the game. But they've been very generous with their time and with their answers. You know, they've been relatively open and honest, which isn't always an easy thing to do. You know, you think about someone like James Johnson, he's negotiating with the players, he's negotiating with the clubs, he's negotiating with Fox. And now he's going to come on to SBS and answer questions from Lucy and Foz, who, you know, are going to be hard. So I think it's been good. I think the whole community has embraced it. And I think that's really important, because the best way that we can make this game survive is by getting our stories out, is by being passionate. And that's, I think, will resonate with a lot of people. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. So even though we do have our problems, I think there's a lot of passion. And if we harness it, we're going to have a lot of success.
Absolutely. I definitely agree with that for sure. In regards to getting these players onto the show, I guess I found a little bit of difficulty sort of getting in touch. I admittedly emailed Brighton and Revolve and see if I can get Peter Guardas on, because he's someone that I really want to get on soon. He's a, if you don't know, he's a Swedish Australian player playing in the Brighton youth side. So I guess it's really difficult to sort of get in contact with these guys, but I guess, assuming SBS, the sort of the reputation they have as a very strong media organization, I guess it makes it easier. But for any, let's say, podcaster or journalist who wants to get these players to, you know, show this, share their story, what's the easiest way you find to get in contact?
Man, honestly, there's a million ways. There's go through the club officially. There's, you know, go through agents sometimes. Agents can always help you out, especially if they're coming up in like a contract year or something and they maybe want to get it out there that they're interested in listening to offers. We're not above DMing people on Instagram and Twitter and stuff like that and just saying, hey, like, would you be interested? I mean, I think always, you know, you want to be very polite and very listen. This is what I do. I'd love to have you on the show to talk about this, this, and this. All good. If not, have a great day. And, you know, listen, man, take 10 shots and if one goes off, then no one saw the nine misses. It's all yeah. good. So.
Like for me, the Reese Williams interview was huge because I didn't expect that at all. You know, doing like three podcasts in.
Yeah, and you would be surprised, like, these players can be generous with their time. These players often sometimes can be bored and they're alone and they're in a foreign country or something, or they're in a foreign city and they're just like, yeah, cool, I'll have a chat out of mine. So it's always, but the good thing is, I think it's like, once you get one, that's always a big thing because then you can show that you can go, oh, look, I did an interview with Reese Williams, say. And then they get a bit of a sense of, okay, this guy isn't going to screw me over, or he's not going to take my words out of context or something. And then once that, you start building momentum. And I see it even like, yeah, sure, SBS is a massive organization, but even in the small show that we do, TWG Live, just see like, yeah, now more people are aware of it. More people are willing to come on as guests. More people are like, they get what the show is about. Like, it's not, we're not going to talk to you for 5 minutes and then that's it. Like, no, we want to kind of really talk it up with you, you know, like... So, yeah, it's a hard one, definitely. But I would just say, keep trying. There's always different ways. Always be, you know, polite, respectful, and transparent about what you want to talk about. But, you know, eventually you will kind of get through.
Yeah, I guess that's pretty much what I've been trying to do for the past, like, 6 weeks, I guess. But it's working to a degree. I thought we'd just delve into some Australian football discussion. In the past week, there's been a lot of material that has come out in the media, some of which have pretty much caused this sort of uprising against News Corp or Fox Sports. So I guess to summarize it, I think earlier in the week, first of all, A-League contracts expire on the 31st of May. I believe a resolution is close to being finalized, or has it been finalized? I'm not entirely sure.
I think there has been an extension. Yes. I think everyone, my understanding right now is that everyone kind of is in agreement in terms of the clubs, the players and the, you know, Football Federation Australia. And then it's just Fox Sports that need to sign off on it. I will say, even though they're all in agreement, I don't know how happy the players are about it. They've taken a massive pay cut.
Yeah. Absolutely. So we don't know the extent of that pay cut. It was reported to be up to 70% or a region amount among that. Because as you recall, if you are engaged in this space, to the listener, Fox Sports did pay the FFA the $12 million that were due in that last quarterly installment for this year's rights. And it was reported that the FFA took a bunch of that money. We don't know where that's going towards. I've seen many theories on Twitter. Which seem to be optimistic or largely pessimistic, which seems to be the sort of the mode where everyone's going. A measly about $2 million were given to the players, leaving a massive pay cut for the last couple rounds of the season, causing uproar amongst football fans. We then jump forward to Thursday evening, where the FFA announced the resumption of the A-League to be in mid-July. And that will not happen unless Fox Sports agree to restart the season. And what was reported by Dominic Bossi earlier this week is that they will have to, they will force a renegotiation of the TV deal, because the TV deal extends until 2023. And they will, and in order for the season to resume, they must renegotiate to a TV deal, which is 50 to 70% lower. I'm not sure if that's illegal. Number one, I'm sure it is. The FFA have taken on a lawyer involved in the George Pell case. So I'm sure the FFA are ready to battle if they need be. But what do you make of this, Nick?
I mean, it's messy. It's a messy situation. And it's a big problem for Australian football that, you know, the stakeholders aren't on the same page. Ideally, in an ideal situation, you'd have multiple broadcasters wanting to broadcast your product and willing to pay a lot of money for it. That's obviously not the case for Australian football right now. In fact, the case is that the broadcaster does hold the rights, basically wants to renegotiate, pay less money, get rid of it entirely. It's a real tough spot that the league is in. You know, it's a tough spot that Fox Sports is in as well. I know that they've been kind of getting a lot of hate. And listen, I'm not one to defend Rupert Murdoch at any stage, but I used to work at Fox. There's a lot of good people who used to work there and still work there.
I'd just like to interject a little bit. The people on Twitter who are attacking Mark Bosnich, Robbie Slater, Tara Rushton, I don't think it's justified to any degree. And I think it's horrific. These aren't the administrators at the top of Fox Sports. This isn't News Corp. And with all due respect, you know, I often don't get political, but we should. There are people that must enforce a better regimen. But I'm not sure that's the right word. But a better public representation.
Discourse.
But it's discourse, yes. But it's not Robbie Slater or Mark Bosnich that are calling shots. You're not going to let Mark Bosnich call your shots. Oh, I'll spend millions here. It's the guys on top of the organization. It really does boggle my mind at how idiotic some people are.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if SBS listened to me in when it came to programming, it'd be SBS Barca, SBS La Liga, and, SBS just football classic matches all the time. When it comes to how much they listen to, that they're not even involved in the discussions. Maybe they take on a little advice sometimes. Maybe they just ask them. But, yeah, I think I totally agree with you, man. The abuse, directing it, but to be honest, directing abuse to anyone online is a bit shit, but... To direct abuse to people who have no power over what's happening. And by the way, I'm telling you, those guys, and you know, I don't know them personally that well, but those guys would absolutely want to show every game of football that ever exists, because that's what we want to do as football broadcasters. We want like every game shown on every channel all the time. So, because it means more work for us at the very least, even if you're just being selfish. But so, yeah, it's, I think you're totally right. It's got nothing to do with them.
Yeah.
People should shut up, basically.
Yeah. But just moving on a tangent here, what does this mean if the FFA will propose a scenario which many people do deem it to be in the court of a public opinion? Fox Sports is now the devil. As I think it's a bit disrespectful to a degree, you know, being a supporter of the game for 15 plus years. You know, if this is the divorce that football fans have been sort of anticipating, it will be sad.
I mean, it's totally disrespectful. Like you're saying, Fox Sports have put in an incredible amount of money. Have done a pretty good job of broadcasting it in that time as well. You know, they've brought in incredible talent. They've brought incredible stories, done great interviews, done great kind of production around it. And I think, you know, this the court of public opinion is very, I think, doesn't have a long memory, because I remember when SBS sold the rights to Optus for the World Cup, SBS was the devil and SBS, blah, 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 and everyone was going nuts at SBS. But then as soon as we got the rights back, everyone, oh, SBS, I love SBS, da, da, da. And Optus as well. Optus, oh, Optus, the worst thing ever. We don't like Optus. And then later on,
savior of Australian football.
Optus, we love it. You know, we love everything they do. It's so great conversation.
I think that's where I want to sort of direct the conversation in terms of Fox Sports. Optus Sport. You know, they've got some fantastic guys at the helm of the organization. They've picked up, I'd say, a lot of rights. The EPL being the number one product that they're displaying. Champions League, Europa League, Copa America, Euros, J League, K League. I can go on and on. I don't think there's many more, to be honest. But still, it's considered to be the modern home of Australian football. I emphasize modern for a reason.
No, but I mean, honestly, today is such a good time. Like, I don't know, might not feel like it, but to be an Australian, to be a football fan in Australia, it's incredible. Because when I was growing up in 2002 and stuff, the only games that you saw, like, even existing was like one game a week, maybe on SBS, random time, maybe in the morning.
Yeah,
maybe
I remember waking up, I think, in the morning in 2015 to go on the SBS website and to watch the Champions League final on my laptop. It's these things, you know?
Times have, but like, man, yeah, going back to like the early mid 2000s, like it was really hard to watch games.
And
right?
I was speaking to a guy who runs a podcast in the England. I thought I'll put that up. Well, as in like, I'm a feature on his podcast, but I was talking about the NSL and how they showed a 1 hour highlights package back in the day.
Yeah, that's it, man. Like, we're so lucky to have every A-League game broadcast. The fact that we can watch so many NPL games via streams, the fact that we can watch K-League now, Premier League, beIN shows about seven different European leagues and also South American leagues as well. So it's just so different to what I grew up with, which was people would give you DVDs of players that you'd never seen before, and you just kind of watch their highlights. This is before like YouTube and stuff. And you'd be like, oh my God, I like would love to see this person play. That's why World Cups were so exciting, because you often got to see for the first time players that you'd read about in magazines or players that you'd heard other people talk about. Now, literally, you can watch any game in the world, and in a way, it's almost saturation. We have too much of a good thing. But yeah, I think sometimes it's that thing of like, man, it is so much better than it used to be. I remember reading about results in the paper from England that had happened like two days ago. So now I just,
intriguing.
Stream the game live on my phone, you know, sitting on the toilet. It's an incredible revolution.
But I guess in terms of after sport being sort of a savior for Australian football, I'd like to draw on the state of football discussion that was... which was administered a couple of weeks ago. I guess the first one really broke soccer Twitter to an extent. So what do you make of that, I guess, coming from SBS? And what are your thoughts on sort of the Golden Generation coming out and making these proposals?
And I love it. I think the more people in the debate, the better. I like, especially people who've played the game or who've, you know, coached in the game or have skin in the game coming out, giving their opinions. I think it's fantastic. I think, for so long, actually, it was kind of annoying how little opinion we were getting on important issues. Now everyone's coming out. Everyone's sharing their opinion. I think it's great. You know, I'm sure people can point out like some imperfections about it, but listen, nothing is ever going to be totally perfect. I think what they've done is really good. I think the state of the debate has massively improved. And I think that's not necessarily just the Golden Generation. I think the state of the debate amongst people online, amongst journalists, I think the level of understanding amongst journalists has massively improved, actually. And I think it's a real... you know, great time. I remember, man, growing up, they were still debating on whether we should, you know, play the ball on the ground or hoof it in the air. Like, now we're talking about broadcasting and states, federations. It's incredible.
Do you think we're arriving at the dawn of a new age of Australian football? I mean, I'm not going to liken it to sort of the collapse of the NSL and the resumption of that and the sort of the conception of the A-League, but I guess it's a new direction to go in, especially with James Johnson now at the helm.
Yeah, I think so. I think, we needed to make big changes. The A-League and Australian football did have big problems, and to do big big problems, you need big changes. James Johnson, he's saying the right things. It's going to be very hard for him to enact all of these things and enact them perfectly. And there'll be many critics along the way, but, you know, good luck to him. But yeah, I do hope there'll be a new dawn. I mean, like, Australian football has so much potential. You got the 2 million participants. You've got when Australia played France in the World Cup in 2018, I think we had 3.5 million viewers, which is more than pretty much any event that year. So, you know, people do get behind the Socceroos. People get behind the Matildas. People play the game. You know, and even in the A-League, people can talk about, you know, there's not that many supporters, but there's still, I think, nearly something like 80, 90,000 paying members. I mean, if you can increase that, you're going to have a great kind of competition on your hands. So, yeah, I do hope that this is kind of the dark before the light. But, yeah, the thing is that I see is that football might not have as many supporters in this country as AFL and NRL, but guaranteed the passion of those supporters is incredible. And I think sometimes that's even more important because when you, even from just like a financial point of view, if you're looking at it and you say, okay, like let's say like, I don't know, either Instagram or Twitter, right? If you have 500,000 followers, yeah, that's good. You can do something with that, blah, blah, blah. But if you have 5,000 followers, but they're paying on Patreon and they're giving you lots of money and they're investing in you and they're really passionate about what you do and they share all your work, that can actually be worth a lot more. Because you have people that are really invested in your game, not
engagement, all engagement.
Totally. And sometimes there's this talk about bringing in the casual fan into the A-League. And it's like, I don't know if we really want the casual fan. You know, they're going to flick on the TV for 10 minutes and then flick to someone else. You know, I did it with the rugby league last night. I watched 10 minutes and I was on my phone. I cooked some dinner. I didn't even watch the game.
Yeah, I guess that's a real potent issue within the game of how do we engage these supporters? And I guess the lack of advertisements also are one thing. But as you mentioned, Patreon, we do have a Patreon at the Roundball Project on Patreon. You can get access
get that
to
plug in.
Yeah, of course. We've got two patrons so far, Daniel Shubb and Lee Brox and Fax, who's on Twitter. So thank you to these guys. If the Patreon, you can get access to our guests early if you'd like. Access to our podcast early as well, access to giveaways, and much, much more. You could be have naming rights over the podcast if you'd like. You can have your sponsor on the podcast. Or you can have your company on the podcast and we'll sponsor it, very thankfully. So the funds will be also donated to many charities as well. So get onto it.
That entrepreneurial spirit. That's fantastic.
It's always good to, I guess, pump money into these podcasters, and it's not for my financial gain. I'm gonna obviously get to reinvest into better equipment, better other things. But that's sort of what the goal of the Patreon is. But moving on from there, in terms of, I guess, Optus Sport, do they pick up the A-League rights? It's been a tense debate. I've seen this article in FTBL saying that they aren't really interested. I don't think many people have seen that. That's not really in their direct priorities at the moment. Although there's sort of this dead silence from Optus Sport. In terms of the how they've dealt with things, in terms of isolated trivia, I'm enjoying it. Do they still do it? I think they've stopped, haven't they?
I'm not sure. I think they were doing it as recently as this week, but I think it's a great idea. I really like it.
And I guess I'd like to bring into the attention the Football Belong series, which has been
totally
absolutely amazing. With talk of the NPL perhaps being picked up by Fox, by Optus Sport as well, is Optus Sport the new home of Australian-based football?
Who knows, man? Like, what I would say is, and I don't know for sure, you know, I'm not in there, I'm not speaking to them, although I know a few of them and they're all great dudes, but Optus Sport for sure wants more sport. Optus Sport for sure wants the A-League, for sure wants to show all the sport they can. Optus, the phone company, which obviously calls the shots, they want to sell phones, they want to sell contracts. So they would be looking at it and they would be saying, okay, of our product, you know, Premier League, for example, are people going to switch phone companies to watch the Premier League? And probably they have research.
Well, tell to think that way for A League.
Totally, right? But like, that's the thing is like, mate, this is what they'll do. They check the research and they'll say, yep, cool, people are going to switch phone companies, da, 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 or they're going to give us money for the Premier League because there's so many Premier League fans in this country. And, you know, maybe the research tells them that's going to do that for other leagues. I don't know. The key will be, does the research tell them that the A-League is a worthwhile investment? And there's two things here. Is from Optus's point of view, you know, like if you're just a cold, hard business, you think, well, right now it's better to see, to watch it kind of crumble a bit from Fox, and then you can pick it up for a cheaper price, right? With less competitors. Who knows? But I guess the thing is to always keep in mind is that these companies, whether it be Fox, Optus, even SBS, none of them are the savior of Australian football. The savior of Australian football is going to be the football fans itself. It's going to be us watching the game. It's going to be us going to the game. It's going to be us talking about the game. That's what's going to save it. And if we do that, then all the broadcast company is going to want to be involved. So I think it'd be fantastic if everyone bids for the A-League rights. You know, I hope they get a lot of money. I hope they, whoever gets it, you know, does a really good job. I got to say, when it comes to Optus, I thought they did a fantastic job when it came to the K-League, because you could have just shown the K-League and just like streamed it out and whatever. And just like, okay, we got the K-League on, stream it if you want. But they the fact that they, you know, put a studio behind it, that they got their analysts to do their research, that they put a little package and they've been doing interviews. I think that to me is the most important thing, that you treat the game with the respect kind of that it deserves. And I hope that whoever does get the A-League rights or whoever gets the NPL rights does the same thing and gives opportunities as well to, you know, new and emerging pundits, new and emerging journalists, new and emerging presenters. So who knows? It would be fantastic, I think, if football was all in one place. But then at the same time, you want to make sure that there's a lot of competition so that, you know, the desire for football is there in a number of spots.
Yeah, I think that really caps off, I guess, a really different opinion to sort of how Optus Sport will operate in terms of their gauging their interest regarding the A-League. But in turn, I guess we'll sort of cap it off with these final thoughts. Where to next for SBS? What are their interests in the future? Obviously, COVID-19 has put a big damp in that, in his prospects, perhaps. But I've always had this thought, you know, what if SBS started investing in the NPL to an extent? You know, I'm sure they could reach, you know, obviously, I know you're not involved in these discussions, but just are there any sort of suggestions or ideas in which that SBS are trying to explore in the near future?
To be honest, man, I don't know on that level. I mean, I'll just say, like, from our football department, we'd love to be involved in the NPL. We'd love to be involved in the A-League, in, you know, anything. I mean, we got the World Cup coming in 2022. Again, man, it's so hard to say right now. I don't know what SBS is going to be doing as a company, never mind in regards to football, in 6 months' time, you know, once we get through this COVID thing. I don't know what it's going to be doing in 5 years' time. All I know is that whatever it is that we do and whatever rights we do have, or even if we don't have any rights, the team and we'll be passionate about football. And that's kind of that's all I can control. That's all I can do is make sure that I'm always going to be a massive fan of football. I'm always going to be talking about football. I'm always going to be writing about it, always going to be doing videos about it. But yeah, it'd be great if SBS picked up whatever football. I'll take everything. But yeah, unfortunately they don't put me in those conversations, probably because I'd just say, yep, get it all. And it costs them a lot of money.
I think you represent many football fans like myself. I see many parallels between us, and I'd love to keep engaged with your career. And it's been a fantastic chat, Nick, and I wish you the best, mate.
Hey, man, I appreciate that. I think what you're doing is great. You know, more power to you. You know, everyone get on that Patreon page. Start investing. You can say that you're one of the first before Neil goes all the way to the top. I really appreciate the chance to chat. And yeah, anytime, man.
Of course, no worries. Have a good evening.